We're going to switch gears here and talk about the end of the legislative session in Springfield. And joining me now on the phone is a good friend of the program, Brian Mackey. He's the State House correspondent for NPR Illinois and WUIS-FM in Springfield. Brian, good morning.
Good morning, Rick. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. I know it was a hectic week in Springfield last week.
I'm just beginning to catch up with all the sleep that I missed.
and then I had to wake you up, right?
Well, yeah.
I'm terribly sorry. Well, so I have a story in with my colleague Monique Garcia in the Tribune this morning where I just found it, you know, only in Illinois in a deep, heavy, controversial election year, could you find a legislative session that ended with a kind of sense, at least a touch of normalcy by adopting a budget?
Yeah, I mean, it was unsettling. Some people actually said that. State Senator Toy Hutchinson was commenting during the debate on the budget how strange it felt after the last few years of just constant bitter political fighting. And, you know, one of the metaphors that we hear a lot in Springfield is Charlie Brown's Lucy in the football, right?
Right.
We would think we were coming close to an agreement and then it would get yanked away at the last minute and Charlie Brown ends up flat on his back. And so it was an unusual feeling to have this sort of quiet resolution to the session.
Well, you got to think that ultimately, I mean, there's a variety of factors here, but ultimately the fact that we went through that more than two-year budget impasse, which we're going to be feeling the effects of that for years, if not decades to come, but that and constituent anger, the lack of funding for some social service safety net agencies, what it did to higher education in this state, no one wanted to even broach that going into the election because nobody would win.
Yeah, that seemed to be the case. I really think there were two sort of things you can look at as the turning points on why we got a deal this year so easily. One was how the impasse ended last summer. This was in July. There were legislature work for more than 2 weeks straight through the 4th of July holiday, and ultimately, they decided to raise taxes. And so that means there's a lot more money flowing into the state's coffers, and spending money is always easier to do for politicians than taking money from, you know, taking more
no
money
one likes to cut
from their constituents. So, you know, because the state had so much more money to spend, it was easier to get to a deal, right? Everybody's happy to be able, well, not everybody, but most people seem happy to be able to just kind of move along with that. The other thing that's different is Governor Rauner, I think, is not feared the way he was in the State House, right? There was the way he was sort of rolled on that, the way the budget passed last year. There was staff chaos in his administration. He went through, basically, he fired his staff, then brought in this other staff from a conservative think tank, and then pretty shortly after that got rid of them and brought in yet a third round of staff. He signed some bills that particularly Republicans didn't like, one dealing with abortion, another one dealing with immigration issues. And then finally, he barely won his primary against State Representative Jeannie Ives. He only won by 3 percentage points. And so I think he is just not feared the way he was, and he seems to have been... his administration participated in these negotiations, but my understanding is he was not an active, at least not an in-person participant in these negotiations.
Yeah, I think when you look back to last year where you had a group of Republicans that crossed lines to join with Democrats to override the governor's veto of the budget, to override his veto of the tax increase, and knowing coming off of a very divisive primary campaign, and knowing that those people that crossed over him the last time were probably there, you know, to do it again if necessary, that kind of changed the dynamic in Springfield as far as the governor, who of course was the primary source of funding a lot of their campaigns.
Yeah, that's right, and still is, really. I mean, the Illinois Republican Party is the, you know, to the extent that it's a force in politics today, it owes a lot of that to him for his funding. He still, you know, is very tight with the chair. It's his chairman still.
Right.
There was a fight about that this year. So, I mean, he is still a force. He still has a lot of money to spend, but there just doesn't seem to be the fear of crossing him that there was in the past.
The you touched on the fact about, you know, with that tax increase, there is more revenue and there's a better ability to fund things. But I'm curious on a political level, because, you know, for months, if not longer, we had the governor saying about how he was going to roll back this Madigan 32% income tax increase. And now, you know, he is expected tomorrow when he signs this budget, he's basically accepting that 32% income tax increase.
Yeah, I mean, I think that cognitive dissonance is not something that would be unusual in a politician, and certainly not with Governor Rauner, and I think we're probably going to still continue hearing that. Now, we're told that the statement after the budget came out was he's going to take action to enact it, which is not quite the same thing as signing it. One imagines it leaves open the possibility of using a reduction veto. You know, the governor has unique and specific powers in Illinois where he can reduce amounts in budgets. The rest of the budget would go into effect, but those individual lines could be cut. I don't think we know yet what he's going to do with that. But it, as you said, him having this money to spend, and not only is he seemingly going to agree to spend it, his own introduced budget spent this money from the tax increase. So it's one thing to be able to say, I want to cut your taxes, which I think people are still going to hear a lot of on the campaign trail, but it's another thing to actually do it. And I think that's one of the lessons we learned in the budget impasse, is how much money that state government spends can't be cut, really, effectively.
Right.
Because of court orders, you know, the state has obligations to people on the Medicaid program, and there's just, you cannot cut as much as people think.
No, and I mean, when you look at this budget, $38.5 billion, and you know, even though everybody walked away singing kumbaya, they talked, oh, you know, it's a balanced budget, there's no tax increase, that was the only conditions that the governor had, and that also was a unique aspect of this budget negotiation, because in the past the governor had always attached some provisions, non-budget related provisions to it, like things that would weaken organized labor or civil trial attorneys, traditional allies in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, this is the so-called turnaround agenda, and that's really what drove the two-year budget impasse. He wanted these things that were not related to the budget, and the Democrats that control the legislature, those things were anathema to what they stand for, and so that's where we stood for 2 years. But this year, as you said, he dropped, or he at least did not, you know, push those demands in relation to saying, you know, give me these things and only then will I agree to the budget. And that was certainly made things easier. You know, one imagines this is a fairly status quo budget. It doesn't do a lot of exciting
right.
new things.
Kind of a maintenance budget is kind of
the
way
I look at it. There's nothing real creative. I mean, you know, look, I don't want to undercut the idea of getting a deal. That is an achievement in Illinois these days, and based on our low bar of the last few years. But this is, you want to imagine, this is a budget we could have had a few years ago had not the governor had these demands, had not, when the Democrats raised taxes back at the beginning of this decade, they made the decision to make it a temporary tax increase. If they'd have just made it permanent back then we never would have been in this position, and because there was that automatic tax cut that was scheduled to take place just as Governor Rauner came into office, he had all this leverage to be able to demand those non-budget items. In terms of, you know, in order to, so that the state could rebalance its books. But obviously things didn't work out that way.
They sure didn't. We're speaking with Brian Mackey, State House correspondent with NPR Illinois and WUIS-FM in Springfield. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Peterson here. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. Joining me on the phone from Springfield is Brian Mackey. He's the State House correspondent for NPR Illinois and WUIS-FM in Springfield. We're talking about the budget deal that was reached. Normally we wouldn't give it all that much attention, except that it's the first budget that the governor is expected to sign, and it's the first deal that we've had since the governor's been in office. We've got a question from Ron. Ron, welcome as always to the Sunday Spin.
Yes, good morning, Rick. My question is, if with this balanced budget, you appear to have some stability, which usually can benefit the economy. So I want to ask you, guess, on the political implications for the government. You know, and again, Rick, you pointed out he backed off on some of these other demands, but I think it puts him in a pretty good position. It's going to be pretty hard, you know, for the Democrats to attack him if he can come in with a balanced budget. So thanks, guys.
Sure. Thank you, Ron. Brian, what are your thoughts?
One imagines that it's better to have passed a budget and be able to have that achievement instead of, you know, having to campaign in crisis, you know, while there's a crisis unfolding in state government. I mean, last time, 3 years ago now, when we didn't have a budget, there were lawsuits unfolding, and we were hearing stories of social service agencies that were shutting down. We saw university enrollments decline because particularly the directional universities like Western and Southern and Eastern really are more dependent on the state for funding. And so it definitely seems like it would be an easier way to campaign on actually having had a budget than not having it.
And not having all of those complaints. But I too think also, I'd like your thoughts, Brian, on this as well, is that as much as now, you know, he's accepting of that 32%, the revenues from that tax increase, the boogeyman now shifts to the proposal by Democrats and Democratic nominee J.B. Pritzker for a graduated income tax that taxes at higher rates based on the higher incomes that occur. And that because it would have to be done as a constitutional amendment, nobody wants to put tax rates in the state constitution, because it would be done that way, it's kind of an unknown that provides an opening for Rauner and Republicans to attack Democrats.
It does. I mean, they're going to be able to say that, you know, Democrats want to raise your taxes again, which, of course, it doesn't have to be that way. It could be in one of the proposals that a non-party group, but one that has some support from organized labor called the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, they put out some rates. And, in fact, a lot of people in Illinois would see their taxes get lower under their particular plan because, of course, a graduated income tax is as your income levels go up, the more money you earn, those higher income levels are taxed at a higher rate. So you might pay one rate for income below $50,000, then a slightly higher rate for the money you make, if you're fortunate enough to make more than $100,000 a year, all the way on up to, you know, we could have a special rate just for millionaires has been discussed. But the Pritzker campaign has decided, even though it's, you know, has been vocally supporting the concept of this graduated income tax, and you're right, it has not decided to put out any specific tax rates or what the details of the plan it would like to see, and that leaves an opening for the governor and Republicans to make it a boogeyman in the campaign. I mean, I'm sure they would, you know, they'll find other things to be boogeyman in the campaign.
Oh, there'll be plenty of those.
Do. But, you know, this one does intrigue me, and I want to mention one of my, I come back to this a lot, but there was a poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University last year that showed pretty overwhelming support for a graduated income tax. Now, this was during the budget impasse, the budget crisis, so maybe things have changed, but even it was well into the 70 percentage points overall favored the graduated income tax. Even among conservatives and Republicans, though, it was greater than 50% support for that. So I've always scratched my head a little bit about, you know, the thought on the governor's team and the Republican side that this is just a sure thing winner. But, you know, that was just one snapshot poll. They may have, I'm sure they have better polling data than I have access to.
As we said earlier, the governor just laid down conditions for this budget that were just make it balanced and don't raise taxes. But it's a budget, like all budgets are, and when you talk about issues of balance here, you know, one of the things I think is very interesting is this expectation of saving $445 million by offering buyouts of pension accrual to individuals that instead of getting the pension as they normally would, they would accept a lump sum buyout of 60% of that they could go invest on their own. And it was, I guess it was pointed out that some kind of similar program was done in Missouri, and 22% of those eligible took part in it. But Missouri doesn't have the same pension guarantees in its constitution like Illinois does. And that seems like a dartboard kind of number.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of things like that in this budget. I mean, the state is going to sell the Thompson Center in this budget.
Again?
And to get some, yeah. And I was talking to somebody from S&P, the credit rating agency, a few weeks ago, and he said, you know, we have in government, you have recurring revenues, which is like an income tax, so you get that money every year no matter what, and you have things that are called one-time revenues, like in Chicago, you know, selling the parking meters or leasing the parking meters. You get one shot at that. And so that the Thompson Center, you would normally say, is a one-time revenue, but it's almost in danger of becoming a recurring revenue if we just say we're going to sell it every year.
It helps plug $270 million if you're, you know, trying to calculate a budget together.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, there are a few things that are speculative like that, and frankly, I'm still going through it. I mean, it was, what, 1,400 pages? But, you know, the both Democrats and Republicans say that they're pretty proud, and they think that this budget is going to fare better among the sort of good government group analysts and the credit rating agencies and the people who sort of score these things for how legit or kind of full of baloney they are. So
yeah, well, and as everybody was basically saying too, you know, it's better to have a budget than not have one.
Absolutely, and I don't want to sell short the achievement of this negotiated budget. You know, I, on the one hand, Springfield is not Washington D.C. Even though it has this reputation for political dysfunction, Republicans and Democrats actually work together the overwhelming majority of the time. Most of the legislation, I would venture to say, passes, you know, 100-8 or 110-0 or something like that. This is not, people are not just fighting over every inch and every issue. But in terms of the budget making, I can't remember the last time, maybe during the Blagojevich era when there were some very strange political alliances that shifted around, and certainly during Governor Ryan's tenureship, is the last times that we really had these kind of negotiated bipartisan budgets where just, you know, a handful of people for principle, for whatever reason, voted against it. They just passed by these overwhelming margins. So that is something that is different, and I'm going to be talking to House Republican Leader Jim Durkin on your show today. He said, you know, he hopes that this can be a template for other issues that come before the General Assembly, this sort of spirit of cooperation.
Well, this was indeed the first budget that most Republicans have voted for in quite a long time in the General Assembly.
Or ever, yeah. Senator Karen McConaughey, I was talking to her after the vote, and she said she's been there since 2012, and this is the first time she has ever voted for a budget.
That's Springfield. And that's Brian Mackey, State House correspondent for NPR Illinois and WUIS-FM in Springfield. Brian, thanks so much for getting up with me. I hope you can go get some rest.
Thanks. Good talking to you, Rick. Have a good Sunday.